Greetings from Podcastville. The church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by 23andMe. Father's Day is right around the corner, and 23andMe's health and ancestry kit is the perfect gift. For a limited time, get $50 off your 23andMe health and ancestry kit through June 17th. And if you buy a kit for yourself too, you and your dad can connect and celebrate your shared genetic similarities and differences with over 125 personalized genetic reports on health, traits, and more. What do you love about 23andMe? Why do you think it makes it a great gift for dad? Because it is. I'll tell you what. This Father's Day, get $50 off 23andMe's health and ancestry kit at 23andme.com/church. That's right. You heard it right. $50 off the 23andMe health and ancestry kit at 23andme.com/church. That's the number, 23andme.com/church. Again, 23andme.com/church. $50 off your 23andMe health and ancestry kit. Offer ends June 17th. Let me ask you a question. Summertime's coming. You're complaining. Nothing's happening in your life. Listen, wiping your butt with dry toilet paper does not remove all this shit. If you got poop on any part of your body, you would just wipe it off. Would you wipe it off with dry paper? Water cleans better than dry paper, my friends. Thankfully, there's a sleek bidet attachment that clips into your existing toilet and sprays your little muffler fucking clean with fresh water. It's called Tushy, and it's the best thing you could do for that filthy little asshole of yours. Father's Day is coming. That's why I'm here. They got a Father's Day bundle that includes a Tushy bidet, bamboo bum towels made of 100% bamboo fibers for your nice little silky asshole, plus a travel tushy because dad's on the go, probably have to go. Give them an everywhere clean. And they also going to ask me about my butthole t-shirt. You know who you get? Now you know where you get your sense of humor from. All these items bundled together are $125. But if you go to HelloTushy.com, you got 10% off the order. Listen, Tushy is phenomenal, all right? They got bidets that start at $69, and guess what? They'll change your motherfucking life. So go to HelloTushy.com right now and press in church. That's HelloTushy.com. Press in church. Kick this motherfucking muley. Coming at you from the Voodoo Lounge. Points motherfucking unknown. You know what I'm saying? It's a church of What's Happening Now, you bad motherfuckers. My little brother, Pablo Francisco, the Christ Killer, Lee Syatt, and your uncle motherfucking Joey, coming at you on a Wednesday. Take this. Oh, shit. There's Madonna when she had talent.
Is that her first album?
This is her first fucking album.
It was tight, man. It was good, you know? Get into the groove. It's like Scarface music, you know?
Yeah, no, this is the beginning of the end.
Really?
You think about fucking Madonna in 83. Excellent. 85 was her, like, I think between 85 and 88 was her fucking high point. She was killing it.
Well, I mean, yeah, especially when she was with, you know, doing those sketches with Mike Myers and, you know, Dana Carvey and, you know, doing the little masturbation.
I forgot all about that.
Oh, yeah. She topped it. She topped herself every year. And then, you know, she went to the masturbation thing and then, you know.
Rude. Well, when 91, when I got into comedy, that's when she released Vogue.
Yeah.
And then she released the book.
Yeah, the Naked Book.
Book and shit.
Right.
Which pushed her over the top.
Right.
Then she got a deal from Pepsi.
Right.
And she made Jesus Black, and that fucking pissed off half of America. But she did her job.
Then she did the Truth or Dare movie.
Truth or Dare movie where she scolds her brother and shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was pretty interesting how now she just put out a fucking song a few weeks ago.
Yeah, just say, the videos.
And they're fucking torturing her. That's not good.
Well, yeah, the video is a guy just laying down, man. Just that's it. He just lays down and just looks at the camera once in a while. It's kind of It's kind of odd, but
Madonna's fucking 60. Give her a fucking
break. Hey, man, she's
out of her fucking mind. She's got smoke blown up her ass.
Yeah.
For 30 fucking years. She's got smoke blown up her ass. So God knows where the fuck planet that is.
Yeah, well, she shops and adopts, man. You know what I'm saying? She goes to other countries. That's what happens. You know, Guy Ritchie goes, man, you have too many kids here. You know, you got different sizes and varieties, man. So shopping and adopting.
What's up, Pablo Francisco?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Great,
man,
to see you.
Good to see you, man.
Great to have your debut on the podcast.
Right on, man. Yeah.
1996. I get a call from Pat Buckles, and she tells me that they're interested in me doing the Latino Laugh Festival. That June of that year, like, they were starting to showcase people.
I'm sorry, 96 or 2006?
96.
Throwing out development deals like crazy.
They're starting to fucking showcase people for 97. Now, in June of 96, I had always known Doug Stanhope.
Oh, yeah.
I had always known Doug since 91 when I got into comedy. But in June of 96, I saw Doug at the fucking Seattle Underground.
Right.
And he just destroyed the room. And he destroyed at such a level that I had a gig that Saturday and I had to cancel the gig. I was so disturbed by how good he was.
Yeah, me too.
That it started making me think about my comedy career and other choices.
Yep, I've been there,
man. I should go make salmon and shit. So I got my my confidence back. It took a few months. Pat Buckles calls. I don't know who the hell Pat Buckles is. Great lady.
Yeah.
She flies me down. She makes me do the first set at the Laugh Factory. I meet Marilyn Martinez, right. God bless her soul.
Yep.
And I'm sitting in the fucking back minding my own business, and you get up on stage, and you took it from Plan B, like they were in Alabama all sad about abortions.
Right.
You took them from there to you just leveled the room. And I still remember the one bit was Seinfeld, the whole cast in Spanish.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ, you destroyed the room to a level that I had to walk outside again and think about my comedy career. Like, I know one thing. At that point when I saw Pablo, I go, I know one thing for sure. I'm on the right path, but I'm miles away from Pablo. Like, I'm not even thinking of moving to L.A. if this is what I got to go up against. Like, that's how powerful it was, Pablo. You destroyed the room. That Seinfeld bit, I'll never forget that. You did each character to the, when you did Jerry, the fucking room, and it was all Spanish people. That's when it was
Kramer.
When it was Latino night, Latino.
Yeah, no, big time.
300 fucking Mexicans in there every Monday night, lying around the corner. Yep. Gilbert Escavel, Houston.
Yep.
Fucking Carlos, you, the last half of that fucking show was Murderer's Row.
Yeah.
Like, they talk about the Comedy Store now. It was like Pablo, Carlos would drop in, Paul Rodriguez, George Lopez. Like, I was just in awe. I was like, you know what?
Chris Fonseca getting standing O's in his chair.
That was crazy.
Yeah, man. It's just, you know, pulling at his technique was, like, you go back, but hey.
Nobody remembers Chris Fonseca was a legend.
Oh, yeah. He got like three development deals, and he tells me, you know, Pablo, I got my own sitcom coming out. I go, man, it's going to be 3 hours long.
Well, they put him on fire. Yeah. They put him on Baywatch.
Oh, Baywatch, yeah.
That was the big thing.
Yeah.
When they put him on Baywatch and he was living in Denver, that was huge.
Yeah, yeah.
That was huge. I still remember his opening. You know, I came from Denver, so I came from watching him.
Right.
Everybody said to watch him to learn how to write. And they would wheel him up on stage. He'd go up there with his little fucking wheelchair.
Cheetos joke.
He'd be half momoed up, and he'd go, people ask me, if I live in Colorado, do I ski? Yeah. I tell them, no, I'm too busy jumping out of planes. That was his opening fucking line. Like, I still remember that, 1994.
Wow.
Like, was that fucking big. Like, that Latino night on Monday nights was just a shit. And I remember going back to Seattle going, you know what? That was great and all. I'll do the festival if they want, but I'll never be one of these fucking guys. This was a complete different level. It really was.
Anyway, that's all we needed. It was like a 10-minute set and a good closer, you know, back then, you know. And then development deals all the time, man. People are just giving out development deals. You pick up a $50,000 here and a $75,000 there. And Willie Barcena, like, had them all, you know. Hey, bro, you know, I got 10 of them, and, you know, I'm telling you, bro. I was like, oh, yeah, me and him, it was an experience to see how, you know, is this what the Latino thing's going? Yeah, Gene Pompa, you know, doing his stuff. And it was in Living Color was throwing auditions for people, you know, any Latino that wanted to try the audition for them. And
now, you started in Tempe.
I started in Tucson, Arizona, and then I went to Tempe, Phoenix, Arizona.
How long were you in Tucson?
I was in Tucson for about, you know, all my life, but started 17, started, and then
At
Laughs Comedy Club, and Gary Bynum would pick, like, he would get the best headliners, man, from Los Angeles. So I would just go in there and watch him, and Tom McTeague, and Tim Allen, and those kind of guys, man. It was just great because you just get to watch these dudes and learn from them, you know. And Paul Rodriguez would walk in there, and, you know, my God, he was great. And he saw me there, and he was just invited me to go and do his shows. So it was, I was really lucky on that.
And then from Tucson, you moved to Tempe. How long were you in Tempe
for? I was in Tempe for about 8 months, man. I got lucky. I met some girls at a Scorpions concert, and I got backstage with them, and I go, yeah, man, I'm going to do the improv on a Tuesday night. You know, I do like 6 minutes. And they showed up, and when they showed up, the club was calling me up. Hey, man, there's some girls here for you. And I go, well, the Tempe Improv doesn't even know who I am. I'm just got on this list of comedians. And I go up there, and I do 6 minutes, and these girls get up, and they go, and they grab me, and they all walk out with me. And John Panette was there, and John Panette goes, whoa, what's going on? These girls. And I go, hey, they go, you can smoke in the condo. It's okay. You can smoke. And these girls, you know, like we were talking earlier about puking on a girl. And I got two girls. They both jump in the bed with me, but I was drinking wine. And I get on the first one. I go, and to make a long story short, I didn't, you know, tag any of them. But my friend opens up the door and sees me with both of them, and I'm all hungover, red wine. And he's like, dude, you just tagged both those chicks. And the whole word gets out that I banged these girls. I go, dude, I didn't do it. Oh, you're so humble. I go, dude, it didn't happen. And from that point on, it started growing into, hey, Pablo knows these girls and stuff like that. And they would come over to the club, ask out the managers, right? And then cancel the date. And the guys go, hey, Pablo, somebody, one of your girls. And it was like, that's how the ball started rolling. So I just started living with Candy Cantaloupes, the porno star. And Doug Stanhope, he lived there too. And he was a nightmare, right? Having sex with midgets. Yeah, man. It was hilarious. He goes, you know what? Sometimes it's like doing a 12-year-old girl. It's kind of weird, you know, spinning her around.
He was crazy.
Oh, yeah, he was crazy. Really crazy. And then from that point on, I just met the guy from, you know, Robert Hartman. He owned like three, you know, improvs. He was a franchisee kind of guy, and just made my dreams come true. So it all worked out, man.
He asked you, so you already had a manager en route to L.A.
Right. Well, he was, thing is that he started this management company. Then he said, you know, I'm going to be too busy, so I'll help you find a manager. So I go, all right. And then on the way to the Laugh Factory, I mean, everybody was there. Messina, a lot of people were there. And when I get there to do the ABC showcase, Joe Rogan decided to step in. And they go, Papa, we're going to have to take you off, man. Joe Rogan's not supposed to be doing this. He jumped in. He was doing the tiger bit, you know, the piss thing. And it was so funny watching my agent going, it's just, you know what, Papa, we're going to take you off. Okay. But anyhow, he's really dirty. But anyhow, he keeps laughing at Joe. Joe gets off. So I had to go after Joe. So I just took my best stuff. I took my ending stuff, my closer stuff, and just put it up front. And I got the audience immediately. And Joe just looked at me. And that's how we became, like, you know, friends. He was like, really good. He goes, you know what? I didn't think anyone could follow me. I was like, going, well, I had to take the good stuff, the back, and kind of, you know, it was like 6 minutes. So when I got off stage, my manager goes, hey, man, I want to handle you. Is that okay? And I go, sure. And Rick Messina offered me to, you know, go and hang out with him. And I said, I'm just going to stick with Rob, if that's okay. And yeah, that's how it worked out. And since then, he was, I own some clubs. I'll put you in the clubs. I'll work you know, as a feature, headliner. And he just developed me. And it was, you know, it was a crazy life afterwards, but other than that, it was a dream come true. So,
and this was 97?
97, yeah.
97, right. You were already throwing heat. And it was a good time. That was when I met Stanhope in 91, and then we reconnected in 96.
Right.
And then I opened for him New Year's 96.
Wow.
And we were talking, and he was talking to me about the Latin thing.
Right.
He goes, Joey, I don't know much about much, but I know the Latin thing's blowing up. I think it's time for you to go that way. And I'm like, I'm not ready.
Right.
He goes, listen, you're good enough to be down there 20 minutes.
You're right.
That's all they're looking for. It's LA. Yep. I still remember him talking me into headlining.
Wow. Wow.
Like, he talked me into, like, taking a week. Like, I go, stand up. I got this week off, and I only got 30 minutes. I don't know. He goes, you could talk shit for 15 minutes.
Right.
I do it all the time. I was like, oh, my God. It was that easy.
Wow. Him. You know, it's, yeah, he was a perfect kind of, like, roommate to have, in a sense, because she wouldn't let us pay the bills there.
So he was your roommate.
He was my roommate. Yeah, and he was driving her cars, and I would drive the cars, but him and this guy named Matt Becker would...
Right, Matt Becker.
Matt Becker. Those guys are just doing insanely crazy stuff, you know, and I'd be, you know, scoring some dope in Phoenix, and they would be in a Yugo, right? And they would make fun of me being in the hood, and I go, what are you doing in the hood, you know? And it was so funny, because he would just do the most insane crap, you know, like when sleeping with that midget from Barnum and Bailey Circus. She's like, where's Doug? And she's like, was out, destined to find him. And he's like, oh my God, she's looking for me. And he takes off, right? And she goes, I love Doug. And he went to the heavy metal cafe, and she runs in there. She goes, I'm going to find it. She was running up to every couple that's dancing, looking up for Doug. Doug, oh, come on. Hey, listen, I love you, but come on. And the circus, Barnum and Bailey Circus. Meet Doug. Then he started taking his clothes off and stripping, and that was like a little fetish of his, you know. He goes, I'm addicted to it. I go, well, you know, just getting in front of
people. That's quite a roommate you had.
Yeah. He was we got a few arguments here and there, but I don't think he even smoked pot. He just smoked, you know, those 100 cigarettes.
Cigarettes and booze.
Yeah, and he come up with this coffee. Crazy material.
Crazy really good. Shit,
yeah.
In the beginning. It was out there.
Yeah.
Nobody was out there like him. People were scared of him.
Yeah, he's young looking.
He terrorized the improv. When he first moved out of here.
Right.
Like in 97, I was hearing it up in Seattle.
Right.
That he was terrorizing the improv lineups. They would ban him for a month because he'd get too drunk. I mean, they just were not ready.
Right.
For that shit. Like, they were just, you know.
You know, I saw him with a black eye and a chipped tooth after a waiter beat him up. Right.
In Tempe. That's
yeah, so my manager goes, you know what? I'm going to the all-star of all comedy clubs, convention up in Orlando. And the first thing we do is we talk about what headliner we're never going to book. And I go, wait, hold on. I go, hey, listen. I go, that thing with Doug, man, it was all set up because that girl was hitting on me. So please, man, don't ban him. He goes, you know what? You just saved his career. And then Doug came up to me with a black eye. Hey, man, he goes, thanks a lot, man. You know, I really appreciate you putting a good word for me. I was like, hey, that's what brothers are for, man. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, he was just incredible. Just one of those wild guys.
He was just wild.
Oh, God, man.
And he's still wild.
Oh yeah, he's still
away. Like,
right.
I just saw the countdown to his special.
Right.
He had people there with suits on. They shot it at the Plaza.
Right.
You know, he's still like, he could have shot anywhere in the world.
Right.
He picked the Plaza.
Wow.
You know, which is like downtown, old, next to the bus station and shit. He's right. That stoic, you know.
Yeah.
So now you're both up here at 97. He's fucking dating a chick from that fucking TV show.
Yeah, he was dating a few. I mean, I think he got married somewhere in between there.
Yes.
And then him and Matt Becker went on this ride. They got kicked out of Candy Cantaloupe's, you know, house. And he goes, you know what? I'm sick and tired of you taking my dog. They had a dog with him. We had to take care of her dog. And the dog got manged or something. So Doug was like, hey, listen, we're going to take her other car. So don't let her know that, you know, we're taking her car, because the Yugo was just planted there. And but he ended up, she ended up catching him, right? And he goes, you get out of my house, right? And so he goes into the Yugo, and they pushed the Yugo out, and they took a video camera, and for 4 weeks, man, they filmed forest fires, them running through concerts and opening up outhouses when people are taking dumps. It was so hilarious. And it was a perfect 10-hour video of them on the road. And if he just could pull that footage out, it'd be hilarious. But it was most decadent.
Now, you did, when you got up here, there was a lot of opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Comedy Compadres with Jeff Valdez.
Yep, yep.
You ended up doing the HBO series that Carlos had done.
Yep, yep.
What was the name of that?
It was called Loco Slam.
I did the tour for that.
Oh, did you really?
I was in Denver, and I got to open for him in Denver and somewhere in New Mexico. It was called the HBO.
Right.
Loco, whatever, but it was just basically him. Yeah. It was after the first season.
Yeah, that was a that lasted like I think 12 episodes or something.
12 episodes. Paul Rodriguez, the executive producer.
Yeah, he was definitely cool, man.
He
definitely
played
cool.
the Def Jam guy at the end. You had to go hug him and shit.
Yeah, right.
And then John Leguizamo had House of Buggin.
Yep. Yeah,
which nobody remembers.
That's what he would dance in the beginning. Oh, yeah.
12 episodes.
Right.
Louis Guzman.
Yep.
And that's some funny shit. They had a
Culture Clash. Remember that?
Culture Clash was big. So there was a lot. There was Latino nights. Well, when I moved here, improv had Latino nights on Sunday.
Right.
The Laugh Factory was Monday night. And it was huge already. It was well established.
Crazy.
And the Comedy Store had nothing.
Nothing.
She kept trying to have people start them, but if you had bad luck with them, then she wouldn't give you spots. So every time she'd bring it up to me, God rest her soul,
right,
I would go, Mitzi, I got to go. And I'd run out of the room. She'd go, I'm telling you, we'll get black beans and rice and fried bananas. And we'll put them in the
some of the specials they got, it's hilarious.
Like, I don't want to fucking do this shit. It's so weird. How do you think comedy has changed the last 20 years?
A lot of people, it's the internet, man. The internet now, it works for you and against you, you know? And just watching, you know, these, I mean, look, I'm a comedy fan, of course. I mean, anything that has to do with comedy, you know, Last Comic Standing, I mean, I'm down with it. But there's just so many of these six-minute comics out there right now. So they kind of got, you know, they're trying. It's just that the material, it seems like it's already been done by us already, you know, some of the topics have been hit. So there's a little bit of soul, but it's not as much as soul that goes into comedy as much. But there's some good ones out there. You know, there's some people kicking.
It's really entertaining.
The
world of comedy right now is very
interesting. Oh, it's strong. It's strong. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what's crazy? Like, what we were doing 20 years ago is not accepted today.
Probably. Oh, no. Yeah.
It's over.
Like, yeah. But it was fun, man. I remember every single day of it, every minute, you know just going to Houston and going to Miami. I mean, those are the best days.
El Paso,
yeah.
Fucking Austin.
Uh-huh.
Like, I remember one of the first times I got an opening gig in L.A. It was opening for you at the Irvine Improv. One night.
Right.
One night. Hartman threw me like a one night.
Right.
And this was the old Irvine
Improv. The Jamboree Road.
The old one.
Mm-hmm.
I think even before Jamboree,
really,
the guy, the Headed. Manager or the head chef was a fucking douchebag to me.
Okay.
One night, he was, I still remember, I don't remember what his name was, but I still remember what he said to me. What
did he say?
Like something just off color. Like something like, I was going to tell you that you get a free drink, but you're only going to be here one night. You didn't do that.
Oh, well. Something like
you
that.
You got nothing. Geez. Jesus. Shit like that, like just something. And I remember walking away going, what the fuck was that? Whatever. And then I got another nod to open for you in Brea, Thanksgiving weekend.
Right.
When we got fired because of that guy fucking dancing behind you naked.
Oh, Paul Abraham. Yeah.
Who I bumped into years later.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On the set of The Longest Yard. He was the cook on the truck.
Yep.
He opened up a food truck.
Yep. Yeah, he did that. I was with him when he did that.
When he opened up the food truck.
Yeah, he was my roommate at the time. So he told me, because I'm working with Diaz. And then sometimes he goes, guess who I'm working with now? Steve Sciarippa or something like that. And right now he's working with Jamie Foxx.
Is he now?
Oh, yeah. He's rolling good, though, man.
No shit.
Yeah, man.
Is he still in Albuquerque?
No. He's right now. He's in New Orleans because they're filming everything in New Orleans, and he's working with Quentin Tarantino. And it's funny because he goes, "Hey, when Kill Bill came out, he goes, hey, you gotta see this set, man. There's a bunch of heads exploding, you know, and you just gotta go." And I go, "I'm not gonna go, right?" And then all of a sudden, he goes, "Hey, I think I met the director. He's kind of a geek, kind of chubby." And he goes, "Why don't you just come on down?" So I went down there, right? And there's Quentin Tarantino, and he's doing a scene with David Carradine, right, with the sword. And he goes, and I was right behind Quentin. And he goes, "All right, quiet, everybody." I'm going, "What?" Just right behind him, right? And he goes, "You ready to do this? Okay, David, you ready?" "I am ready." And he goes, "And action." He goes, "Call off the mission. Do it now." Right? And he messes up his lines. He goes, "You okay there, Dave?" And I was eating a pot sticker. And the boom guy's like this. And I go, "Eat it." And he goes, who are you? Right? And I was right there when they filmed that scene. Call off the mission. And then when David Carradine was done, he does like a little front kick. I was going, tiny guy, really tiny. But I was like, holy smoke, I'm in that scene. I'm right behind him. You know, it was cool. And then he goes, yeah, kid, crazy, nuts, kid. He was working on that for like 4 months, and he was rolling some Afghani butt at my house, right? And he goes, "I'm gonna get Daryl Hannah so high right now," and he got her so she started crying. It was hilarious. "Oh my god, I'm so stoned." I was like, "Going, oh dude,
dog, he's been with that food truck."
Yeah, he
for built 14 years. I mean, I worked with him in 2004.
Right,
the food truck.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
He worked on the longest yard.
It was, yeah.
Both places. I think he came up here with us.
Yeah, he was
in Santa Fe with us, and then he came up here with us.
Yeah, he was doing We Are Soldiers, bouncing over to Mark Wahlberg doing Planet of the Apes, and that was a crazy day.
That's amazing that he was a crazy guy.
Still doing it.
A fucking business that feeds fucking huge movies.
Well, you know what? How that started is that he goes, "You know what?" He goes, "I'm working for a craft service guy, and this guy ain't treating me too well. If I only had $25,000, I could buy myself a truck." And I went, "Well, I just happen to have $15,000-$20,000 in a thermos." And he goes, no. So he does a big old, you know, we're partying, right? Does a big old gacker. And he goes down the street and he talks this guy into putting his house on a loan. And they bought the truck that day. And for 2 weeks straight, driving that truck around, this guy's one of those handy guys that knows electricity and all that kind of stuff. And they put freezers, TVs, all in 2 weeks, just drinking, same clothes, the whole thing. Put it together, drove up on the Warner Brothers lot, got the OC, and then movie after movie after movie. From that point on, it just went on like crazy. And he's meeting stars. I met Mel Gibson. He's doing this Christ movie, and I speak Syrian, so he's going to come out to lunch with us. And I was like, "What?" And I was at my house, and Mel Gibson comes up, and I was like, but I was a little tanked, so I didn't want to, you know, ruin it. And he's from Redondo Beach, and they went out, man. It was incredible. So he's met a lot of people, man.
That's good for him.
Oh yeah, he's still funny too. Paul Abraham, wacky Iraqi.
He was
Iraqi.
Fucking nuts. He was nuts. The
wacky Iraqi. So yeah.
Lee, they didn't know what to do. You wouldn't.
Why? So you guys planned he'd be naked stage. Behind him?
Jeff Garcia was the feature.
I think where Christopher Kid Reed was there. I think too.
And I was the MC. You had like 9 guest sets.
Yeah.
It was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Right.
It's 2000. It's the year 2000. It's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Nuts, Kate.
Pablo just showed up on Wednesday night from Vegas, where you just ended up winning like 30 large.
Yeah, I won some money, yeah.
You were playing blackjack or something.
Right, it was him,
You came right from Vegas.
Right.
To Brea Improv.
Right.
There was no going home to take a shower. There was nothing. So we get to the fucking Brea Improv, and I'm like, "Let me get a beer." And then it's like, when Pablo's the headliner, there's no cocktail served.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That so I looked going. At Pablo. I go, "Pablo, what the fuck?" And Pablo's like, "We got this handle." He goes, "Go get the fucking chef." There was like some guy in the back, and Pablo gave him like $100. He goes, "Go get his wine, beer." So they're telling us we can't drink. I mean, it was just craziness. And then Pablo had a couple in him, so Pablo kept saying, "Joey, bring up," because I was the host. So I brought up Kid Reed. I think we even brought up the chef.
Crazy.
Pablo got it together, goes up there. He's doing his thing. He's ripping him apart. But Paul Abraham is walking behind him completely naked with a hat on, going like this, like, "Give my regards to Broadway." And the people would lose it. Me and Jeff and the other 8 other openers are in the back howling.
Yeah.
And the next fucking day, like that Friday, I get a call that we've all been fired, except for Pablo, because we had fucking booze and fucking methylene powder and fucking the whole deal. And then here's an interesting story. Pablo came clean.
Yeah.
And fucking I got my job back.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
That's like, why I told him, I said, look at the videotape, you know. I go, just look at the videotape, because they videotaped the show, and your portion wasn't on there. So and Robert goes, "Okay, all right, okay. It was a misunderstanding, but Rumpelman's, that's what it was, man.
Rumpelman's
was my drink, man."
And then you called me one time to open for you in Houston. That was sensational. You had the fucking strip club send a limo for you at the end of the night.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're big pimping. And then he showed up with a... Today he showed up with a light. You know, Pablo is always very generous. You gave me a Lakers shirt that I still have. Oh, of the velour purple I made a mistake and wore it in a 90-degree day, and I lost 92 bucks. It's a Laker velour shirt.
Nice.
Beautiful. It's Kobe Bryant.
Was it Kobe? Was it? Yeah.
Kobe. It's a Laker old school warm-up. Now if I put it, it's like 4X.
Oh, geez.
It's like 4 fucking X.
He starts melting on there.
I don't know where the fuck he got it. I still got that thing.
Got it in Miami, believe it or not.
No, this was Houston.
Houston.
And then in Miami, you and I had a reputation for tearing up that condo.
That was a nice condo, street,
that was my condo of death. I used to tie a chick up, and in the morning I'd have to cut her off, so I had the ropes there.
No, I remember that. You told
me. I just made long ropes, and I would cut her off loose in the morning. This is what I'm saying to you, Pablo.
Right.
20 years ago, we couldn't do what
we were
doing.
How much rope would you have? How much rope would you have?
Oh, please. I had more rope than the black guys that tied up Jesse Smollett.
Jesus.
Just think of it. Did you see the rope that they released?
No, I didn't see
all
that.
The rope and shit. I had more rope than he had. I just bought a bundle of that sticky rope that pricks your skin, and I would tie it on the bed, and I'd tie her up. She always wanted to be tied up.
So I didn't believe it at first until the girls came in, and boy, they were smoking.
Where, man. Miami?
Yeah,
improv?
Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah.
That was that Coconut Grove Street. In 98 and 97 and 99.
Everybody would go in there too, man. Chris Rock, Madonna would go in there.
I'm telling you.
Whitney Houston.
I'm telling you. You have no idea what was witnessed at that fucking... I remember still going downstairs one night and seeing the hottest naked women dancing on top of a table in the Italian restaurant because it was a fine dining Italian restaurant.
Right.
But after 11, no rules.
That's right. That's when it turned crazy, man. You know what I'm talking about, man?
You think I'm kidding you? It was Scarface type shit.
Oh, yeah.
People were in there throwing thousands, and they would just tell women, get naked, start dancing on top of the table.
24 hours a day.
24 fucking hours a day.
Yeah. It was beautiful, man. It was a beautiful thing.
But, I mean, comedy must be like the only job where you could, like, if I was on a road trip with somebody and they started unpacking rope, I don't think I'd want to stay. Like, that's like
on the next forensic.
Where do you think these? I mean, listen, when I asked Pablo what comedy has changed, 20 years ago, you had George Lopez drinking up a storm.
Yeah, George Lopez, there you do.
You had Mitch Hedberg out there tearing it up. I know I was out there tearing it up, Pablo was out there tearing it up.
Yeah.
There was every 4 weeks, there was a calamity somewhere.
Yeah,
somebody didn't show. Somebody didn't make it to radio. You know, Tommy.
We had
some problems in comedy. And it was accepted because that's what comedians do. Richard Pryor raised the bar for us. When he lit himself on fire, that gave us the right to do whatever the fuck we wanted to do. And, you know, when I got into comedy, I didn't get into comedy for the girls. I'm not a fucking good-looking guy. I got into comedy for the party.
Yeah, that's what I was.
And the brotherhood.
Yeah.
I didn't get into comedy to meet girls.
The brotherhood,
like,
that's
like
funny.
Like a rock star. I got into comedy, A, for the brotherhood, and B, because nobody would judge my party. Fuck, nobody. Yeah. If you read Ladies and Gentlemen with Lenny Bruce, he did heroin every night with strippers. Burlesque dances at the Chelsea Hotel. That's why I got into it. I didn't know if I wanted to do heroin, but I knew I didn't want a responsible life.
You wanted the option.
I didn't want to be irresponsible. Man. I wanted to be a rebel. I wanted to live in a car, and I just wanted to do comedy. You know, it's like that when you listen to that song, American Band.
Right.
We're an American band. We come into your town, let your party down.
Right.
We're an American band.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was, an American comic.
How many flights do I have to change? You know, I'm not coming back. I'm going to have to come back on a Wednesday. You know, then, you know.
We were an American comic. When I started doing comedy, I did not do comedy for women. I did comedy for not being responsible. I didn't have to be responsible for anything. I didn't have to get up at a certain time. I'd have to go to bed at a certain time. I'd have to answer anybody at a certain time.
You drink on stage.
Drink on stage. All I had to do was keep oil in my car and fill that gas up and pay the insurance on it. Those are the only rules I had in my life.
Yep.
That's it. When you pick this life, that's why you pick it. You're irresponsible. You're irresponsible. I can't. You know how many times I got to do something at 8 in the morning, Pablo? Like somebody calls me and says, I have to do something at 8.
Right.
Now, I have a 5-year-old, 6-year-old. Yeah. I'm awake at 6:15 every morning, whether I like it or not. Just, but if you tell me that I have to be somewhere at 8, insomnia kicks in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You insomnia can't, kicks in. Like, so once you tell me I got to be somewhere at 8, I'm not going to fall asleep.
Absolutely. It's like going to school, high school. Remember that?
Every night I'm tired. At 8:30, I got to drink a 4 fucking cup espresso because I'm dying.
Jeez.
But the night I have to go do something at 8, I'm fucking tip-top Magoo, jumping.
Oh, yeah.
I'm singing three songs and shit.
Because, jumping in the shower at 5:30, of course.
We're fucking rebels. I never wanted to live out. If you think I wanted to get up at 8 and go to work, I knew when I did it, I didn't want to do it. As I was doing it, I'm like, I got to come up with something. The only job that I fit the itinerary for was drug dealer. That even came close. No responsibilities, no boss. That's the only other job that you could do.
I'm not selling CDs after the show. I'm selling bags.
Yeah. I'm not here to fucking sell CDs. I'm here to snort coke off your pussy.
Yeah. You know what? You could say something on stage about cocaine, and after the show, they're going to offer it to you. Oh, yeah.
That's how I would get my coke. Just talk about doing coke. I love it. Da, 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 da. Right after the show.
Psst. Boom.
Psst. You want to do a blast? Yeah. You got any extra? Yeah. All I got to do is make a call. Boom, and then there you go.
Yeah, make sure you don't do it before a second show. You'd be like, hey, what's going on? Moving like
that
crazy.
Was my thing. That was the only thing that kept me together, that I had enough respect. I didn't have respect for myself.
Right.
I had zero respect for myself, but I knew that I wouldn't do anything on stage.
Right.
So there was no
way. Never been stoned before? Or no?
I could get stoned and go on stage. I could smoke 20 joints, lose them for a minute or two, and then focus in and get them.
Right.
I could take an edible and go on stage.
Really?
I could take a Xanax, like a baby 0.25, to calm me down a little bit. But cocaine never worked for me on stage.
Wow. Yeah.
It was just a zero. It was the weirdest thing because I did it St. Patty's Day, 1992.
Right.
And I never did it on stage again. It'd be in my pocket.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, right.
The fucking Ever Ready battery was plugged into the leg.
Right.
But don't get me wrong. There was no way I would do it before.
Right.
And it's like I wouldn't do it in the daytime.
Hmm.
I never did coke in the day. It's funny. I'm trying to write this book.
All right.
And before I kidnapped the guy,
right,
I worked at a car dealership for a few months. You know, I'm trying to detail this book as much as I can, so you just can't. The truth was that I was working. I started a Subaru dealership that was like Studio 54.
Okay.
Like everybody was snorting coke in there. There was a guy that did heroin and he fucking robbed banks at lunchtime. I mean, this was live. It got to the point where it was so crazy. I said, let me go to a Chrysler store. They were a little older. They were all white.
Right.
They were all like respectful. Uh-huh. Half of them were veterans and shit. You didn't see nothing like I've never seen anything like that before. Like at the Subaru place, somebody in service saw coke.
Right.
At the Chrysler place, the manager and the salesman, the head salesman, would sell coke.
Wow.
Everybody was coked up. And I still remember days that there'd be 5 customers on the lot, and every salesman in that office would be so coked up, they were in their office pretending to be on the phone. And people would be out there going, like, I'm here to buy a car. And they'd be like, we're on the phone. Like they were coked up. So from that lesson, I didn't snort coke in the day. Like, I'm like, I got to pay attention to these guys. Don't get me wrong. I fell for it a few days.
Right.
But I always knew that I'm not going to sell a car, and I'm going to sit in here like these four fuck. The dealer's name was Rob Dando.
Rob Dando.
Sweetheart of a guy.
Subaru.
We sold Chryslers.
Right.
And his big pet peeve was his red Parker pen. His wife gave him a Parker pen for their anniversary.
All right.
And he felt it was his lucky red pen.
All right.
So every time he went out to get a customer, he'd be so coked up, he'd be sweating. He'd put his pen down, and I'd swap the pen. I'd steal it. And he'd come back and look for the pen and look under cars.
He'd
say, I can't sell a car. Somebody stole my lucky red pen. So then he would go buy one, another one across the street. I'd wait till he'd get coked up. I'd steal the pen.
He's doing the tricks.
I did this to him once a week. Then I started taking the red pen from him.
Oh, gosh.
And giving it back to him. Like putting it in the bathroom.
Oh, God.
Somebody would go to him and say, we found the red pen in the bathroom. And he would go, but I wasn't in the bathroom. And then he got so fucking...
Mysteries of the unknown. If you...
He started getting so coked up. Lee always thinks like I torment him.
Right.
He doesn't know I've been doing this for 30 years. Like, right. I make people go crazy. Like, I'm the best at making people go crazy.
Oh, yeah. Jeez.
So I would put pens in places where he weren't. Like, I would go into the secretary's office and put the pen in her desk. And then she would come back and go, Rob, why is your pen on my desk? And he'd go, I lost that 2 days ago. Why is it on top of your desk? I don't know how I got here. So he would scratch his head because he was the best salesman. So my game was to throw him off point.
Right.
So then he started selling coke. But he had a wife that was straight that didn't do
coke. Oh, God.
So he would hide the coke at the office. He was getting 2-3 ounces at a shot. And what he would do is he'd throw cut on an ounce.
Right.
And weigh it into grams and put it in little packages.
All right.
And hide it in the ceiling. And I would go to service at 6 a.m. You right. know when service first gets there?
Yeah, right.
I would go there, coked up from the night before, take the ounces out of the ceiling. And I put coke in the grams and take coke out of there. I take an eighth out of one ounce, put an eighth of speed of cut in there and take another eighth. I was doing that to him for a month.
Holy smoke,
and then I started switching the coke on him.
Okay,
I started taking it out of the ceiling and putting it in this.
You can find him. You can find yourself in the trunk.
God, I was tormenting this kid. He would come. I would see him in the.
Things. He still thinks about this. There's no way that he does.
Listen to me. I did this to him for 6 to 7 months.
Oh my God!
It was a constant torture every day. He would go up to the manager and go, "I don't know what's going on. I'm losing my mind."
Good God! Unsolved
mysteries. I probably stole 40 pens from him, and I had a secret spot for them. And one day, when he was in the middle of his nervous breakdown, because then he found out somebody was messing with his coke, and he couldn't figure out who the fuck it was. I got to get to the bottom of this. Somebody's bulldozing me in the mornings. He was a white dude. He would use words like bamboozled and shit that. He's like, somebody's bamboozling
me. Somebody's sabotaging me.
And I'm like, bro, I don't know what you're talking about. He goes, we got to start coming early. I think somebody comes here in the morning and takes my coke. I was tormenting this kid. And then one day I showed up. I was quitting. I was getting ready to quit and go back to the Subaru store before I kidnapped Bella. And I fucking gave him. But I see, God punishes. Because 2 weeks later, I ended up in fucking jail with a fucking $50,000 bail. And the day I quit, I had a stack of pens. It had to be 4 inches. 30 fucking 30 of those parking pens.
Yeah, yeah.
Had them in a heavy duty rubber band. And the day I quit, I go, Rob, I got something for you.
A stack of dynamite.
And I put the fucking pens on the thing. And he almost broke in half. Wow. I was like, it was you. I had no fucking idea. Were you stealing my coke too? I'm like,
God. Unsolved mysteries. If you.
I invited him to my wedding. He was have good
at any.
He was sweating up a storm at my
Someone's
wedding.
Coke is disappearing. Why?
You know,
what reason?
Who else does that shit to people?
Gosh, man.
I tortured that poor soul.
Good God.
When I started switching the coke on him, Pablo, you know how that is.
Yeah, that's...
When you think you hid the coke behind that picture, and now it's in the tissue box, and you don't know how the fuck it happened, and you're fucked up already.
Oh, yeah.
Now your mind's playing tricks on you.
Is there any stories coming back, Pablo? Like, Joey did mess with me that weekend. Like,
no.
Joey.
I never messed with
my
Pablo.
My coke didn't move.
I remember putting it in my head, and then he was wearing it.
You know, in reality, I never think I've done a line with you, Pablo.
No, I don't think
we
have.
We
I offered him.
We each other did it, but we never really broke that bond because...
Well, he was freaking me out because he would go. When I first met him, he goes, "Hey, the vampire," and then shot, and then I go, "What is he doing?" He goes, "You know what I'm talking about, 2 shots, a little porno movie." I was going, well, "This guy knows too much. This is
because I used to tell him about
witchcraft,
breaking out the cape."
Yeah, you know, but I didn't understand
that. Meant. Whenever you do coke, you break out the cape.
And then when you said the porno, then you do the shot and once in a while.
You put the porno on a couple shots.
I go, what is this guy?
He thought I was like a heretic. He thought I had a fucking, direct camera to his fucking house.
Okay. Yes, that was kind of, you got a porno in the VCR. You know, what? How does he know this?
Oh, I would torment people. That was my world. How long have you been sober for now?
We're about a little less than a year, or about a year, I would say.
How do you feel?
I feel, let's put it this way, I feel good. I got a lot more energy, you know, but I started smoking a lot more. But other than that, I mean, I'm having a good time. You know, I feel kind of proud. But then again, you know, I don't get too cocky because, you know, liquor's free. You know, it's there, it's around. So liquor stores are fun. You know, you go in there, you get beef jerky, that kind of thing, and you'll get some bean dip, whatever, with some Fritos and they want to just grab a, not the big bottle, but the little bottle. But hey, I'm doing good at Rite Aid. I just walk through the aisles, you know, right through the liquor
aisle. You're not drinking either.
Yeah, no drinking. No drinking. No, I had a few, but it wasn't a buzz. You know, I took a few sips just to see what was like.
Was drinking a trigger for you?
Everything was, you know. It's getting off stage was fun, you know, because you know there's a party going on and you want to write some jokes. And sometimes the jokes come when you're high, and sometimes they don't. But nowadays, they just come like crazy. It's just like you just got to have a different way of writing now. It's like I just you know, put down the premise, but now it's like got to write the whole thing down because I forget when I see the premise. And sometimes I got to write them on the wall, you know. And so I got to get a little bit more organized in that, but. Yeah, the ideas still come, but I talk about, you know, yeah, I like going back and talking about the topics because every topic, you know, deserves to be talked about again. So that's what I'm doing right now. And it's fun. And it's just a little bit harder, you know, trying to find somebody to impersonate, you know, like, you know, remember back in, you know, 2000 and stuff that you had, you know, Michael J. Fox and that kind of thing, you know, and now you got no one who sounds... They all sound alike, you know? So you got Mark Wahlberg. Hey, man, you doing good? You doing good? Okay, work on that one. But there's not too many. I can, you know, jump around and, you know, with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Everybody does an Arnold, but you got to just switch it up and make it more clever, that kind of thing. But other than that, I'm doing good.
What did Arnold say when he got kicked in the back?
I'll be back. I'll make back. Okay, that's what happened, okay? you know, get out! Good God. Who does a drop kick? You know, Jackie Chan.
Just dropped that motherfucker, didn't they?
God.
He handled it well, though. He's like 70 years old, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. He's at Muscle Beach all the time, I think. And
Joey asked how comedy's changed. I remember, like, I grew up watching Comedy Central in the early 2000s, late 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember watching yours. I remember people talking. It was way before the internet. I remember people talking about it. Like, can you guys talk about how I don't even if it wasn't Comedy Central, but how that stuff used to change your world?
It would change your world.
Like, that was crazy. I remember when that came out.
Yeah, the producers would tell you. They go, you know what? There's no, back then there was no internet, but they would say, hey, listen, we're gonna play it 6 times this year, and if you get some requests, we're gonna play it more. But it's gonna change your life, and it did, because after the first playing, I go, you know what? I was too different, I thought, you know, and then I go, by the second time these people see it, they're going to talk about it. So it ended up playing, getting like 12 requests.
I was going to say, you must have got a lot of requests.
It was great, man. And just, I couldn't believe how many people had on VHS tape, you know. So I had a guy named Charlie who would go around, hey, kid, I got to show everybody the tape, you know, and he would show me. And it was like a half hour, but it was fun, you know. It's that's how it circulated. People were just recording it. They didn't have it. You couldn't go to ComedyCentral.com back then and, you know, just get it off their website.
Didn't even have TiVo.
Yeah. So it's just, if you caught it, you caught it. If you didn't, you didn't. So it was a good thing, you know. It did change my life, and a lot of people just did come to the show, but they would all constantly start repeating it, you know. So I was going, all right, cool. Sometimes it would be 3 times a week, and it went from 12. It was initially 6 times they're gonna play it. We're gonna play it every 4 or 5 weeks, but then it started getting to more requests. So they played it like 21 times or something like that during the year. So. It worked out.
You know, Pablo, now that you're sober, I mean, I listen, there's nothing anybody could do. And I'm not being angry or anything. I'm just speaking the truth here.
Right.
You know, the number one comic today is Kevin Hart. You know, and there's nothing I could do. Am I mad at Kevin? Not at all. I love Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
I wish him all the fucking luck in the world. He's a sweetheart.
Right.
He's the hardest working guy in show business. I love him to death. You know, Sebastian, who we all love.
I
love Sebastian. He's selling tickets. Oh, great, yeah, he's comic. Funny, though, man. Bill Burr is selling tickets. Great comic. You know, what I want, you know, this comedy career, this journey that we take,
right,
comes in peaks and valleys.
Yeah,
that's what people understand. You know, if you go see John Wick, you see John Wick 3, you see that guy is the evil.
Right.
Guy, Ed Dukakis. Dukakis is his name. He used to be the guy from Chef. On whatever. I know Mark from my friend, you know. You know, Mark was living out of here. You know, this career is peace and valley. And all of a sudden he's sitting in front of his TV,
right,
and they call him up to be the bad guy.
Crazy.
In John Wick, the number one movie in America. This is why people live in Los Angeles. This is why people stay here, because the lottery ticket could come when you're 28,
yep,
or it could come when you're fucking 90. No one knows, you know. Junior Soprano, did Godfather 2. Then you didn't see him for 30 fucking years, and he pops in one of the biggest series of all time.
Hey, yeah.
You know.
Steve Sciarrippo.
Steve Sciarrippo.
Booking the Riviera.
Booking the Riviera.
Hey, you know, I want to be a star. You know, yeah. How do you do that?
Nah, he's boom. A fucking author. He's in Australia doing stand-up.
Right.
With Michael Rapaport. And not Michael Rapaport, the other guy. Doesn't matter. What I'm trying to say is that this is peace and valley. Pablo, no bullshit. You know me.
Right.
I've always thought. Right. You were in the top three comics.
Yeah, you know.
Talent-wise,
well, thank you, man.
There's not too many people who could deal with fucking Pablo. There's not. I've watched, I always said, the best two people live I've watched in a positive reaction. Listen, I'm a dirty comic. I'm up there talking about shit nobody deserves to listen to. If you come to one of my shows, shoot yourself. You have no idea what talent is. I remember going to see Pablo and studying him. There was two comics I studied on the road. Somebody once told me, you're a loser. You play to the back of the room. You got to learn to play to the front of the room. And there was two comics that showed me that vision.
Right.
I didn't know it wasn't Rogan. It wasn't Chris Rock.
Right.
It was Pablo Francisco and Richard Jenny.
Wow.
I opened up for Pablo in Houston, and I never saw so many people come out happy from the room.
Yeah, I get some good crowds.
I never saw the happiness. There was no cursing. There was no eating pussy jokes. There was no disgust, that shit that comes out of my mouth. It was just wholesome fun about Arnold and this and that. And at the end, people were just, you know, it's like a Joe Coy show.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like people could leave there like they just saw a Pixar movie. And the only people at the time when I was a young comic that helped me explain that bridge to that gap and was you and Richard Jenner.
Wow.
I saw it.
Yeah.
I saw the reaction of people walking out of a Pablo Francisco room. With Richard Jenner, I saw something else.
Right.
I saw that when Pablo comes up to me and asks me what I want to drink.
Right.
I'm a gentleman. I look at Pablo's eyes and I go, Pablo, let me get a gin and tonic. Lee wants a Maker's Mark and Coke. This was Miami.
Yeah.
People who went to see Rich Jenner were not fucking white trash.
Yeah,
people went to see Rich Jenny had class. They had money for those tickets. Mm-hmm. And in 2000, I still remember fucking people who had class. West Palm Beach,
right,
would not look at the waitstaff when Rich Jenny was on stage.
Right,
they would not take their offer. Oh, just let me get a water.
Right, right, absolutely, yeah, right.
That's it. Let me get a gin and tonic.
Yeah,
you know, gin and tonic. Yeah, when you gave me the check, it was like, thank you. And they put it down.
Yeah.
It was just overwhelming. The way he controlled the audience.
The topics that
he threw at you was something different.
Right.
That's an education that nobody's ever going to get to see again unless you see him live. You'll never see that in his fucking hour special.
Get the last special he did, A Big Pile of Me.
Was it good?
Oh, it's amazing. It's great. It's totally different from what he usually does, but it... You know,
so you were a student of Richard Jenny.
Oh, yeah, Richard Jenny.
You had to be.
He came downstairs at Gotham. He goes, hey, man, I want to get a picture with you. And I was, what? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, it's going to be a good Christmas. And he started talking to me. And I know that he's so intelligent that when I was trying to bounce off him, man, it was difficult because he was, you know, talking about he was all these Burger King movie theme toys. He goes, what next? To Jesus Christ, Crown of Thorns, right? And he goes, and it was so funny. But I was like, but he was a really... I just like the way he go into topics and just he's doing it, you know, just explain it really intelligently and have a good explanation for it.
Now, when I saw you in Houston,
okay,
15 years ago, whatever the fuck it was,
right?
We were both whacked out all
oh,
week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like Friday, whacked up the shows. You would just give me a hug, see you later. You want to come? You need money? No. Bam!
Right, right.
He would just leave. He would come up to me. You need money? You need... Bam! That's right. It. It's Pablo. He left.
Yep.
I can't imagine what you're like today sober. You must be lighting those rooms on fire.
You know, I to tell you the truth, man, you know, I'm pulling out the new material and stuff, and I like to get response, you know, all the time. So I'm rehearsing more in my shower, and then, you know, usually it goes in the living room, then into the kitchen, you know, and I get everything locked down. So right now, it's the shows go by quicker. Let's put it that way for me, even though you do the time, but it's like it's. Sometimes I want to get to the joke so quickly I talk a little bit too quickly, you know, because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to forget the joke, you know. So it's a lot of preparation now, but it's fun. It is all fun, but now I got to write more of the joke down. Last time, just write the premise down. Boom. You got it all over here. But now it's a little different.
And you're thinking about doing an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thinking about putting a new hour together.
Yeah, I mean, we're at a good 45 minutes, you know. But, you know, when you start doing an hour, you have to keep repeating the hour over and over. So sometimes I just like to do the old stuff and then put in the new stuff and then listen to it and then just find my segues right there. You know, so it's, I don't know, it's a lot of videotaping, you know. And, you know, we hate listening, you know, watching our own selves.
I fucking hate it.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So... And then you got to fast forward, but thank God, you know, we got the internet now. So watch, I put everything downloaded onto the to the computer, and I just shuffle through it, and it's a lot more better than that. Just take the audio tracks and listen to that, you know. And
you're still doing the voiceovers?
Still doing voiceovers, man. It's fun, you know. Subaru XV, that's right. And yeah, it makes money, and it's fun. So
I remember when I first went to my first audition. It was for Church's Chicken in 97.
Okay.
I just done the voiceovers for them.
Really?
Didn't you do voiceovers?
I did. Church's I was a Chicken? Spokesperson
for Church's Chicken.
I wrote those commercials, man.
And I went in the room like, I'm going to tell them I know Pablo and shit. Like, Lee didn't even give me the opportunity.
Well, no.
Like, come in. Thank you.
Right.
That was very good. You'll be hearing from us.
Right.
And you can see on their face, they were saying, go fuck yourself. Didn't even say, like, right. I know Pablo Francisco. Like, I was just going to go right. and tell the casting people, like, I know Pablo, so let's get this party started.
Right.
Let's get this fucking process. I'll give him a call right now. He'll call Church's Direct. This is 97.
Yeah, man. It was...
You were already the official spokesman for fucking Church's.
Yeah, man. Wrote those commercials. It was great, man, because after we wrote those, right, they got back, they got the original spokesperson. She was on Fred on Sanford and Son, that one lady, right? And I did another, like, three more little sizzle reels of more commercials, and I sold them, so I still got it back. So they took a little Quisva and said, get out of here. And so they put me back in there.
You big dummy.
So, yeah, it worked out. So that was my Church's Chicken money, and I was, you know, put it away, bought a house, and had a good time.
You've been doing voiceovers ever since.
Yeah, I've been doing it, like, once in a while. You know, I've been auditioning like crazy, and what's great about it, you can do it right there in the comfort of your own house.
Who's your voiceover agent?
I got CA. Yeah, CA. So it's, you know, you just do it right there in your house. You take, grab your iPhone and just
get ready this summer. Joey Diaz. This summer has Joey Diaz written all over it.
So. Yeah.
They call themselves mercenaries.
Boink. So
I'm doing one tomorrow, and I'm excited about it. I'm doing Big City Greens. My daughter watches the fucking show.
So is it a series?
It's a Disney series comes on at 5 every day. Me and her watch it.
Oh, wow, cool.
So when I got the offer, I was like, this can't be fucking happening.
Great.
And I'm doing the part of like a fucking guy in an alleyway that scams Cricket.
Right.
Out of Do-Re-Mi. It's got Jesus... The guy from, what's his name? Trejo? Danny Trejo.
Oh, Danny Trejo? Okay.
The guy from Taxi. I mean, I'm honored to be on the fucking voiceover. So I would love to do that shit.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to do it on a full time. Those people, it's so hard to break into that. Like, you broke into that right away.
Right, yeah.
It's tough to break into that market. Right. A couple of years ago, I did Mafia 3, The Game.
Oh, really?
And I thought that would open up doors, but it really didn't.
Right.
And then I thought the podcast, you know, when I got here, I was with Sutton Barth and Minari.
Right.
First 6 years.
Sutton Barth and Minari, right.
And they were like tremendous at voiceovers. And one day they were like, oh, you're not getting shit. Choke yourself. So I just stopped doing voiceovers. I was like, fuck it. I'm not good at them.
Right.
Everybody tells me I got a great voice, but obviously. I can't make a fucking dime doing them.
Now,
so
were you driving to the auditions to do a voiceover?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I couldn't stand that, man.
That was a long time ago. You would have to go to, like...
all the way to Wilshire.
Wilshire had one. There was one up here somewhere that I came up here. Like, I did Shark Tale. Like, I read for Shark Tale.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, oh, I'm getting this, baby. And then they called me one day, and they're like, listen, you're really in high regard for this.
Right.
Are you in to do this? And all. I'm like, oh,
getting
yeah.
all pumped up.
I'll fucking do it.
Then it gets chinked.
The guy that called me was like, listen, they'd rather give you, you know, $25,000 than give somebody else $100,000. Especially there's a lot of mob voices. So I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. I'm going to get this. I didn't get dick.
Fuck.
I was like, if I didn't get Shark Tale, I'm not going to get nothing. And I heard Vincent Pastore's first residual check from The Shark Tale was over $100,000.
Gosh damn, man.
That's the, you know.
Going in your underwear and just.
Eight Voices movie makes fucking $100 million. You're living in fucking Easy Street for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that movie previous.
Have you done movies?
You know what? I've done a few. I've done a few for for ABC, like ABC movies and stuff like that. But when I met Don LaFontaine, the guy who did it, he goes, right. Yeah, just come to my house. And I went to his house for like 5 hours because we were doing this Frank Caliendo show as the Three Tenedores. And he goes, you know what? I do three of these a day and I live like a king. I live like a king. So come on down and we're going to do some voiceover. And he had the, you know, the bubble that, you know, that he gets into his chamber. House, yeah. Oh, yeah.
People do them in their house.
Yeah. And he just gets a piece of paper and goes, get ready. Keith Sutherland, you know, on 24, box office, whatever, box DVD set. And he goes, there you go. I live like a king. Just really humble about it, you know, and just. That's all he does. Three a day.
He's still alive.
Oh, no. He passed away.
He passed away.
Yeah, from a blood clot. But
a blood clot?
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. He goes, I got something in my lungs. I don't know what it is. And it was like going, well, we'll find out, you know. And it was like a little tiny blood clot in his lung, in his vessel. So, yeah. So it was, but after I went to his house, he gave me his ISDN unit, right? And when I was there, you know, I noticed that he introduced me to all these guys that do the voiceover, like the one who does Disney, you know, Hercules and all your favorite Disney characters, that kind of guy, right? And I just happened, they wanted me to go and do like a tribute to Don, but that same day I got Howard Stern. So I went on Howard Stern and it was a beautiful day, but it was kind of like, it's kind of sad at the same time because, you know, I flew into New York and, but still got Howard Stern. So it worked out. You're looking hot. So. And from that point on, his wife called me once in a while and keep in touch. And he's a cool dude, really cool dude.
That's funny that you imitated him. You did an impersonation of him. And he, a lot of people, when you do an impersonation of him, they look at you a little weird.
He goes, I always wanted someone to do me, and you do me better than I do me. And I was going, can I take a picture of you? And he took a picture of me and put it right there, and you know, with all his family. I was like, okay, cool. And we hung out. And he was a good guy, man. Really good dude. And we went back to, if you go to like YouTube and just go Three Tenedores with Frank Caliendo, you can see it. You can check it out. It's us three doing all movie previews, guys. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of funny. And we're on tuxedos and get ready for Underground Abyss. And we all take turns doing our movie previews, guys. So it works out. It all works out, kid.
Do you guys remember like the first, because when you start comedy, like you're struggling, you're not really making money. And obviously, you don't want to, I'm not asking to brag about money, but the first check where you're like, holy crap. Like, I got, like, this is a check written to me. Like,
yeah.
Like, I was like, that must be crazy.
I remember, yeah, I mean, the first big check?
Yeah, sure, whatever, anyone.
Mine was with Fred Silverman. I signed with him. I think he was a president of ABC at the time or something. And he sent me a check for $19,800, and that's how much I owed on my Discover card, exactly, about maybe $10 off. So as soon as I got it, I went, I had to pay off my Discover card. But other than that, yeah, I mean, some of these corporate gigs, they pay sick money, you know, you get $30,000 sometimes.
You're still going to Finland?
Still going, yeah, I still go to, I just got back from Australia and I went to Hong Kong, you know, and now Finland, it's going to be a while before I go there because I was always up in Finland doing all the cities up there, and it was a YouTube that was really responsible for that. So it's like, you know, sold a lot of tickets, and I couldn't believe it that, you know, the internet was that powerful. So I still go there, or I usually go to Sweden a lot too, but
right.
I gotta change up the act, you know, when I go there, you know, pull out the old stuff, get it, you know, tune it up a little bit. People like to see that, they like to see the old hits, so I'll do the movie previews guy and just add Chris Rock in there. What's the deal with these tortillas? That kind of thing, you know. Do the Allstate guy, and people go, well, they don't know the Allstate guy there. I go, yeah, but they'll see the clip, and then they'll go to Allstate guy, and then Allstate guy will, you know, bounce
over. Who's the Allstate guy?
Are you in good hands? Do Decepticons and Transformers usually become a liability with Allstate? And what's up with Caitlyn Jenner? How can you wear a thong when you got a dong? That kind of thing. Are you in good hands?
So, those commercials have been going on for like 10 years now, so, you know.
Yes, Farmers. You know, bop, bop, bop. What's up with
That's
this?
That's the black dude from Major League, right?
Yeah, Major League. Yeah, I forgot his name.
Serrano. He was the president on 24.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I'm the president. That's right. And what's up with this Verizon guy going to Sprint, man? That's Illuminati, huh?
Yeah, he did. That little right, chubby motherfucker.
Yeah, and he's talking,
he's
too.
He's getting chubby, too. Yeah, he's talking, too. He wasn't talking, but I saw that the other day. I'm like, that motherfucker.
Yeah, he's talking, man. Just a little bidding war. That's kind of crazy.
And Burger King's out of business too. What's up with that shit?
Are they?
Yeah, no. They're done. They're completely done, man.
No, they're not.
Swear to God.
They just introduced the Garden Burger.
What?
People gonna go in there and eat that fucking plant burger?
You're telling me they got a Garden Burger?
They got a Garden Burger, supposedly. Lee's gonna go try.
I don't know, man. We just had one. I mean, right by the Pep Boys, level done.
Really?
Yeah, and
down in Redondo.
Up in Redondo, man. But they were right by the Jehovah's Witness Church too, and it was a cul-de-sac. That doesn't work. Yeah, the meat
stuff. People don't want to eat people next to Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah,
churches.
Yeah.
You just don't want to do it. You're not in the mood. You
know, yeah. They leveled it. I guess they're closing up a bunch of businesses now. Starbucks. Remember, there's a bunch of those, and they say that Subway is going downhill after.
Thank God. I tell you who hates Subway. I
know, kind of creepy. Jared.
My fucking daughter hates Subway.
She inherited that from you?
Oh, my God. She is anti-Subway. She just go on a rant about Subway.
All the sandwiches taste the same.
No, I don't know why. Somebody at school, something happened with her and fucking Subway. And she's 6 years old. She's like anti-fucking Subway. She don't like the hamburger place across from the pizza joint, that new place where they make those creepy
hamburgers. Oh, I haven't been there yet. Burger M?
Yeah, Burger M.
Burger M?
That place looks weird, Dad. I'm like, fuck it. You got a good eye, kid.
Wow.
Somebody learned from you. Why don't you smoke pot?
You know, it was friendly in the beginning, but man, it gets me paranoid, you know.
How about the pot cookies, pot brownies at night?
Oh, geez, I mean, subscribed by what, Dr. 420, I mean, yeah, it just sinks, and it just
makes you feel like this.
Hey, I'm slowly running a red light, I don't know why, it's like, I'm leaving the refrigerator door open a long time.
Pablo, you know how crazy I was, you know.
Oh, yeah, you were smoking like crazy, I don't know how you did it.
No, I'm not talking about the reef. I'm talking about, you know how crazy I was with the drugs. I mean, I still sit here some nights and I go, I can't believe I'm not going to the bank to take $100 out to buy a gram of coke.
Right.
Like, I really cannot believe it, Pablo. I try to explain it to people, and I can't even explain it because I don't believe it myself. You ever don't believe
something? Yeah, you know.
Believe it. Like, I cannot believe I stopped snorting coke. Like, it baffles me. Like, right. There's times I'm driving, I'm like, I hope this isn't a dream. Like, I hope I don't wake up tomorrow and I'm that fucking crazy guy.
Right.
And it's going to be 12 years this November. 12 years.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I've eaten some fucking couple Vicodins. I've drank a couple beers. I've eaten a couple Xanax. I did a couple lines of ketamine. But I didn't do
ketamine.
The coke.
Right.
I didn't break down and do the thing that was going to eat me alive.
Like, yeah,
that
that's
was
stuff.
Eat me alive. When I watched Ray, the movie Ray, at the end.
Okay, yeah.
They said he was 64 when he finally got off heroin. And I remember sitting there going, I can't take it till I'm 64.
Oh, no.
There's no way. I think I was 44.
Yeah, right.
I was 44. I said, there's no way I'm going to make 20 more years if I do a gram of coke a night.
Oh, God.
3-4 nights a week. There's no, and that was just the starting point, Pablo.
Right. No. Yeah, I know.
A gram is where it starts.
Yeah.
Where it ends, you never know where the fuck it's going to end.
Right.
By the time I finished, I was doing heroin that summer.
Right.
The summer of 2007, I was doing heroin.
Were you smoking it or?
Snorting it.
Snort. Oh, yeah.
One quick line of Chinese heroin, and I was doing it on Mondays.
Right.
And that kept me off the powder all week.
All right.
If I would do the heroin, that would keep me off the powder.
Right.
And then that on September and October, he stopped sending me heroin. So I went right back to the coke. And it was like, it started at a gram.
Right.
It started with a gram at 10. And then I sneaked El Compadre, another gram at 12.
And you're drinking too on top of it, right?
No.
You never drank on coke?
No, because my wife was in the other room and I didn't want her to know I was doing coke.
Gosh, how can you maintain?
So smoking Camel Lights, one after the other.
Right.
To the fucking filter. They would turn off. They would burn the finger off and shit.
Right.
You know, and I decided to quit, whatever, 2007, November 8th or whatever the fuck it was. And the first month I shot a movie, and then after that I sweated out. And then I came to the conclusion I didn't like the word sober. I learned from being in federal rehab and from being under rehab and in prison and all that shit.
Right.
The hardest time I had was when you told me I couldn't do something. Once you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to do it just out of spite. Don't fucking tell me that.
Right.
Don't fucking tell me. I know not to do it. Don't fucking tell me, all right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
So I'm one of those people that, you know, I sit here sometimes, and I'm sitting with my daughter watching TV, and I go, fuck, I had a daughter 30 years ago that this didn't happen, because if she was on my lap, I'd be thinking about how I was going to look at my next bag of powder.
Uh-huh.
You know? Right. So we already know the thing about me being completely sober. So what I said was, I said, I got a deal. No heroin, no coke, no Oxycontins, nothing heavy.
Right.
Not even alcohol. Like, I avoid alcohol. I like it, and I can drink it. Every time I get on a plane, I get a free drink. You know how many fucking Southwest vouchers I got? I got more Southwest vouchers than they got.
Right.
But I came to a conclusion. I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Just so I still feel dirty, and I still feel that greasy of Joe Diaz.
Right.
I'm going to smoke dope.
Hey, man.
Do edibles.
Edibles.
From time to time, I'm going to dabble in some illegal fucking pill or acid just to keep the back of the mind sane. Just to let me think I'm still the piece of shit I always was. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I didn't like the day I snorted ketamine. It was fun.
Ketamine is
about a year ago when Yo Romero was here, one of my buddies gave me a Percocet. I ate a Percocet one day on a Sunday. I was high for 12 hours.
Really?
Did I do it again? No, I didn't do it again.
Was it a good buzz, or was it good high?
It was a fucked up high. I did this podcast at lunchtime, and him and his cousin was sitting there. He goes, you want to do a pill? I go, why not? What am I?
It's my mom's medication.
I took like one pill, and an hour later, I was off and running.
Really?
And I had a podcast that day, and I had to work through it. Lee didn't even know. I didn't say nothing to nobody.
Wow.
The thing that saved us was y'all didn't get high, so I cleaned the office. But we got acid there.
Right.
I still got acid there. I think we got rid of the ketamine. Somebody left the ketamine here, and I threw it away. I can't find it.
Yeah, we have a little bit of everything.
I just didn't want to be sober, and it's worked for me, Pablo.
Right.
I just didn't want the word sober. I wanted to at least know that I did something.
Right.
It doesn't have to be coke, and it's working for me. It's 12 years.
Hey, man. It's a long haul.
It's just a little suggestion for you.
Yeah, it's just...
I know you had your struggles. I think you're a fucking great kid.
No, thanks, man.
I think you're a great talent, and you want me to tell you something else? I think you ain't done yet.
I feel like you're
just going into your fucking groove now.
I feel like I'm just starting. I'm just loving it, man.
The longer you stay healthy, the deadlier you get, probably, though.
Yep. Well, thanks, man. Those are good words. And with all the stakes standing, that's right. Bum, 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 bum. I'm so excited just to get on stage nowadays. But I feel like 22 sometimes, you know. Sometimes I get up and I feel like, what do I feel like today? I go, well, you know, about 28, 27. I just act like it, you know. But never like no getting up and feeling sore, you know. It's like, get up, do a few push-ups. Now, don't get too crazy working out, because I hate, you know, doing the push-ups and all that kind of thing. So just do a few pull-ups and, you know, it just cracks, you know.
You're going to meetings, you said?
Yeah, I go to the meetings. But I haven't been to a meeting for like maybe 2 weeks, you know.
How come?
Because there's that one guy, man, he's always pissed off, you know, and he says, says the same story. And it's the same guy. I know there's a meeting every... The reason they call it AA, because when you reach for a drink, they go, uh-uh. That's what happens, right? So basically, I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was a place where you can get drunk and no one said anything. But you don't want to go in there drunk, though, because... No.
Do you have a sponsor now?
Not a sponsor. I kind of did, but, you know, he was bugging too much, you know, and just wanted to call me up. And, hey, man, you doing okay? You know, and I have dreams and stuff, you know, and they wanted to, you know, keep it level. And, hey, man, want me to go to a show with you? No, don't go to a show. Just you stay home. I'll call you. You call me. And that's the way it is, you know. Just got to keep that strength going. And I'm a happy camper.
How's Robert doing?
Robert's doing great, man.
You know, how's that cocksucker?
Yeah, he's moving to Nashville so he can be closer to New York. And Disney's up there, too. You know, his wife's a singer. So he told me, Pablo, you know, but I'll still be bouncing over here into Los Angeles. And he still runs Levity, and he's a great guy. One of my best friends. Is my best friend. I mean, the guy looks out, and he's a good dude. Good guy, man. And he's very smart. And he goes, you know what? You just do what I say, and everything will be just fine. So, you know, I just go, all right, cool. And he owns a lot of clubs now. It's crazy. You know, so if I want to work the Funny Bone or something, boom, there you go.
It's been a long 20 years, Pablo. But you know what, brother?
Hey, man.
we're still fucking here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How fucking great is that?
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, look, time's going by quick, but I'm not getting any older, you know?
No, you look beautiful.
Thank you, man.
You really did. You surprised the shit out of me.
Right on, man. You look good too, man.
What's the website? Where can they find you?
PabloFrancisco.com, and then you can hit the Twitters, you know, Pablo_Francisco, and check it out. You know, you download some of my stuff, and, you know, it's funny, and, you know, if you want, you know, I'll be the comedy jukebox, you know? I'll take requests.
Listen, I don't know your schedule by heart. I just looked at your website. I saw you're taking it easy. You're not doing the old Pablo schedules of past.
I took like 3 weeks off, and I'm going to be in, I think somewhere in Boston. It's going to be at the White
something. Yeah, you got some great dates. You got Houston. You got a couple great places.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we're going to just feel it out. Just can't wait to do Houston. Love Houston. Houston rocks, man. So
anytime you want to promote anything, you want to come up here and talk shit, you need a hug, you get in the car
from
the beach.
Hell yeah, man.
Come on up here, and it's just a pleasure to see you. I missed you last week at the Ice House.
Right.
Yep. They switched our nights, and then couple weeks ago you were at the store, maybe.
I was at the Laugh Factory,
and I had a spot there, but you left before I got there.
Yeah,
I got there before you got there,
hanging out with Jay Davis. Yeah, man. So hanging out with Jay Davis, good guy, and looking forward. I'm going to try to, you know, bounce into the Comedy Store and see. Last time I was there, I saw Joe. He was great. He was cool, gave me some advice, and really mellow guy. I wonder if it's going to be like is he ever going to have a boy, you know, good old Joe. He's cool, man. Funny, and his last special rocked. That was a little intimate. We're talking about intimate kind of shows, and that was hilarious. You know?
The one in Denver.
No, I think Wilbur.
Wilbur, yes. Wilbur has become a great place.
Absolutely, yeah.
A great place to. When I first did the Wilbur, I was like, ugh. They sent some money into it. They fixed it a little bit, and the sound system is great. Yeah. I like both his last specials. I thought you were talking about. I like Denver too.
Denver's rocking, man.
That's a great city to do a special at.
Right.
There's so many great places to do special. There's so many great venues now.
Right.
You know, I thought that we had great venues 22 years ago. We lost the Coconut Improv.
Oh, I know, huh?
Which was just Rehab Central.
But I think they reopened it, but somewhere in downtown. Now.
Right. They reopened Miami. They're going to Miami. I think I'm going in October.
Nice kid.
But they. Coconut Grove was just a once in a lifetime.
Yeah, I was there all the time, man.
I was there 6 times a year for 2 weeks.
Oh God, great!
And it would just be 2 weeks of blackout. There would be nothing but blackout. One night I would go to South Beach. My buddies own a hotel on South Beach. They would pick me up at the Improv, like maybe Monday morning, and I would go to South Beach, eat Cuban food all day.
Oh, wow.
Go on their balcony, get sun, and then at night we would just smoke dope. That was the only night I had that was normal. I wouldn't do blow or nothing like that. I would just go down
to nighttime.
No, I would only, what I'm saying, in between those 2 weeks, I would only take one night off of blow.
Right.
In Miami, which was that Monday when I went to South Beach. There was a place walking distance that had a bodega. The name of the hotel is called Paradise Point.
Paradise Point?
Paradise Point.
Paradise.
And every room is a different thing. Like one room is the Tucson room.
Oh, okay, I got you.
It's like cactuses and shit. And the other room is the boat room. You think you're in a boat. There's a fucking seal flying through the air.
Right.
And they would put me in a room. I was that dear friends with them. They wouldn't charge me. And you could walk 2 blocks to this bodega. Have you ever seen the movie Empire?
Yes.
With John Leguizamo.
Yep.
He goes to Miami and he meets the guy at a table, and the guy goes, "Put your table on the." And he goes, "What?" He goes, "Spit your gum out and put it on the under the table."
Right.
When Leguizamo goes under, the guy's got a gun there. That table is in front of that bodega.
Right, okay.
Look at that bodega and Empire, and you're like, ugh! Let me tell you something. They gave you Cuban food by the pound. So you go in there with you'd go in there with a cellophane, I mean, Lee, a big cellophane thing. And they would just pile it on. I think it was $2.99 a pound. I get like 9 pounds of shit of food. It was like laundry. And we'd get a rocon picadillo, you know, ground beef with olives. And we'd get fried bananas by the pound. Like everything was by the pound. You get a cup of Coco Ricos, that coconut soda, and we'd walk back to Paradise, 2 blocks away.
Oh.
2 blocks away. and we'd walk back to Paradise Point and get fucking.
Some people, you lose their appetite, but you would like, you would get.
No, no, no. On the days I didn't do blow,
right.
I would just refuel. That's why I got up to 418 pounds.
Nice kid.
No, I would do the intermittent for everybody. Oh, yeah. I intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
Great.
I'm doing it.
Wait till you see what comes with intermittent fasting.
In Miami.
Because for 3 days, you intermittent fast. Oh, you don't eat. You just drink.
I do the South Beach
diet. And then the 2 days later, you eat all day. And now you're heavier than when you started. You're like, wait a second. I was 210 last week.
Yeah.
218. That's intermittent fasting. It takes some and then more.
Yeah.
Because you got to stay on it for 10 years.
It's crazy.
For you to break the system. So I learned.
I learned from intermittent fasting
from doing blow. Right. The biggest I got was intermittent fasting.
Wow.
Because you don't eat for 2 days.
Right.
And then you eat everything.
Yeah, well, you know, the South Beach night, that was cocaine, techno dancing, and, you know, a little ecstasy.
Somebody has been putting old clips of me up lately. Like, they found the clip of me when I did the one guy's show on, stand-up show on Stars.
Right.
And then somebody put up ER, an episode of ER I did with a cut thumb.
Wow.
Somebody put that episode up, a fucking cold case. And I looked at it, and I had to turn it off. I almost started crying, Pablo.
Yeah, well,
that was after 2 week binge in Houston. That
really?
Was that Christmas, because Pete used to book me after Babbitt. Pete would book me the 2 weeks of Christmas, and then I would leave New Year's, and Jim Gaffigan would come me in New Year's Eve.
Gaffigan, yes.
I would do those 2 weeks in Houston, drinking, snorting, and eating. You know, when you go for a cheese omelet there, they give you a whole separate dish filled with french fries at the Greek joint, at whatever it's called.
Here we go.
They give you an egg omelet,
right,
thick, with cheese all on top of it, not this fucking lactose-tolerant fucking delis around here.
Yeah, damn.
And then they give you a whole dish filled with fries and a whole dish filled with toast. You know how they give you two pieces of toast here? I think it'd be like 8 there at this place.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
And I would go there every morning and drink, eat the cheese omelet with a dish of french fries and 16 or 17 Coca-Colas.
Elvis Presley.
After you do blow all night, there's nothing better than a can of Coca-Cola.
Nice, kid.
Or iced tea.
Nope, yeah.
Ooh, with a lot of lemon.
Yep.
That fucking body needs that vitamin C, Jack. You or orange juice.
I think every single vitamin's
Bro, I would snort. I would fucking drink an orange treat. What do you think that orange juice does to you? It just puts fucking fat on you. That's it.
Really?
Oh, my God. It's nothing but sugar.
Yeah, but it's the good sugar.
They're telling you now not to drink fucking juice no more. That's worse than soda.
Oh, God, man. I heard juice kills cancer now. Now it doesn't.
Nah, it depends. Like a little dash of pomegranate or something like that.
All right.
It's good for the dick stick. What's the name of the website, my brother?
PabloFrancisco.com. There you go.
Pablo Francisco, I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thanks, buddy.
Stay sober, because within 1 year, you'll be the fucking killer. They can't resist you, bro. Yeah, that's real talent.
Man, thank you, man.
No vulgarity.
Yeah, man.
Whistles, noises. You jump up and down, sweating profusely.
I know.
Laying your soul on the stage for these motherfuckers. So if you have not seen Pablo Francisco lately, he ain't going nowhere, bitches. He's still alive and kicking. Do not forget, I will be in New Orleans Friday at the Fillmore. A couple tickets left, and there's a couple tickets left for the Tabernacle in Atlanta on Saturday night. And then at the end of the month, I'm at Columbus, Ohio, at the Funny Bone. I'm keeping my schedule light like Pablo this year, too. Hey, it's summertime.
Keep it light.
I got to hang out with my little six-year-old daughter. Right. I want to thank Pablo Francisco for taking the time. It was a pleasure seeing you.
Right on.
You're one of my favorites in the business. I want to thank you motherfuckers for listening. And I want to thank the Christ Killer for always being here and taking bullshit and whatnot. I love you motherfuckers. Now, for a word from our sponsor, let me tell you something. Bidets are common in the rest of the world. A bidet saves you money on toilet paper, all right? The bidet to use is Tushy. You know why? Because it sprays directly into your asshole, and it removes all that disgusting shit that you eat, the hummus and all that shit, so you aren't sitting on bacteria that leads to nasty things like hemorrhoids, yeast infections, UTIs, itchy assholes, skid marks, etc., etc., etc. Tushy sprays your ass with fresh water, not toilet water. Tushy connects to the water supply behind your toilet to spray your dirty fucking asshole clean. You understand me? It's the same water you brush with, you filthy fuck. You could spray your asshole dip your nutsack in there and wash that out. Now, wet wipes, they're worse than toilet paper. They're terrible for the environment, and they cause anal fissures, I don't know, like a fucking stick comes out of your ass. You don't want a stick coming out of your ass, right? That's why you got to get a bidet. It's 2019. Get your shit together. I love using Tushy. Why? Because it's tremendous. I sit there, and I just let the water, nature, take care of my asshole. I look forward to fucking taking a huge shit now that I got a Tushy. The aim is tremendous. Fucking, just a man. Would you clean your crusty dishes with dry paper if a bird pooped on them? No, because it's fucking paper. Don't clean. You need water, cocksuckers. And I'll tell you what, it's Father's Day, so Tushy's going to make you a tremendous little deal here, right? They're going to throw in a Tushy bidet to upgrade your toilet to be a porcelain fucking throne fit for a king. That's your father. They're going to throw in some Tushy bamboo bum towels. They're going to throw in a Tushy travel. And they're going to throw in a T-shirt that says, ask me about my fucking butthole. Who's better than you? Nobody. All these together are a buck and a quarter. But go to HelloTushy.com and get 10% off your order. Listen, I've been with Hello Tushy for years. You guys have heard me. Since 2016, we've been working with Hello Tushy. It's the best thing you could do for yourself. Aren't you sick of having a stinky asshole? Go to HelloTushy.com right now and get a bidet. They start at $69, matching colors. They're fucking tremendous. And they got a 60-day money-back guarantee. Hello Tushy, press in church, and get 10% off your order. Listen, 23andMe is a tremendous Father's Day gift. And you're asking me why, Joey. Why? Because you get $50 off. You want to give your dad a gift that's unique. As unique as he is, discover how genes influence well-being and lifestyle choices with insights with genetic weight, muscle composition, sleep quality, and more. Traits reports give insights into how genetics can affect, you know, a thousand things. Mosquito bite frequency, motion sickness, fear of heights, and more. Give dad a gift that shows him that you care, because they got wellness reports that can help him make informed decisions about his health. Explore where his DNA is from and over 1,000 regions worldwide with the most comprehensive genetic ancestry breakdown on the market. That's what 23andMe has to offer. Can even opt into a connect with people who share your DNA, like cousins, second cousins, third cousins. 23andMe is phenomenal, and it's the best Father's Day gift you could get. And if you buy yourself a gift too, you and dad can connect and celebrate all your shared genetic similarities and differences with over 125 genetic reports on health, traits, and more. And that's just what start. What do I love about 23andMe? That you find out who the hell you are. So do me a favor. This Father's Day, get $50 off the 23andMe Health and Ancestry Kit at 23andMe.com/church. That's 23andMe.com/church. Listen. $50 off a health and ancestry kit. You're never going to get that again. Offer ends June 17th. So do me a favor. Go to 23andMe.com/church. C-H-U-R-C-H. That's 23andMe.com/church. I want to thank 23andMe. I want to thank Tushy. I want to thank CBD Lion. I want to thank my bookie. I want to thank ZipRecruiter. Anybody who works with us, I love you guys because you provide a great service to the church family. And I want to thank you motherfuckers for having my back. Do not forget, Friday, New Orleans, Saturday, Atlanta, Tabernacle Theater, 7 o'clock, Steve Simone, be there or be square. I love you motherfuckers. I want to thank Pablo. I want to thank my man, the Flying Jew, a.k.a. the Christ Killer, a.k.a. fucking Lee Syatt. And I want to thank you guys for always having a back. Have a great weekend. Have a great remainder of the week. We love you, cocksuckers. Stay black. Lee, kick this fucking mule.